Thanks for joining this afternoon. We're happy to have all of you here. We're excited about our next series of town hall meetings that we have started for the next six series, I being the first one out of the gate. So please come back. I might not be the best one, but come back. There'll be better speakers than me later on with some interesting topics for sure. But I wanted to give an update on the foundation's efforts with COVID-19 and where we stand and things that we're doing to hopefully help all of you. For those that don't know me and haven't met me, I'm Stephen Taylor, and I'm the president and CEO of the Sjogren's Foundation. If you know my personal story, I've been here quite a while. I've been with the foundation now 17 years after a career with the American Heart Association, where I was for 9 years. Last position with the Heart Association was vice president of corporate relations. My mom was diagnosed 6 years prior to me joining the foundation with Sjogren's. And it's one of the reasons I looked at the opportunity when it presented itself to be CEO of the foundation. So today I'm going to give an update a little bit on where we stand with our reaction and responses to COVID-19, especially around the hydroxychloroquine issue, as well as answer some questions about frequently asked questions and talk about going forward in the future as well. For those of you know, we've been pretty active since early March on making sure that we were ahead of, as much ahead of COVID-19 as soon as we had started hearing about it, like all of you in early March. And so we have done a number of steps to secure our voice in the discussion around COVID-19, especially since hydroxychloroquine started to become a major issue. But first, I just want to mention a couple of things as I get to begin. I love seeing many of your faces because I know many of you. It's pretty funny to see you all on screen. But just so you know, the CDC did change yesterday some of their guidelines on the new symptoms of the disease. And I just want to make sure that you all heard that in the news. Besides the fever and the cough and the shortness of breath or difficulty breathing, one and the same, but if different people feel it differently, shortness of breath or difficulty breathing is the same thing. They've added chills, repeated shaking with chills, muscle pain, headache, sore throat, and a new loss of taste or smell. Now, as you all know, few of those things do correlate with Sjogren's, muscle pain, et cetera. But obviously, these are more of an onset of these symptoms 2 to 14 days after you've been exposed to the disease, which you may have not known you were exposed to the disease. So they've added those chills and those muscle pains and the headaches, et cetera, to the list of symptoms. So I just want you to be aware of that because that just came out late breaking last evening. In addition, we did upload a frequently asked questions document to our website. I'm going to hit some of those later on in the conversation, but I thought I'd bring you up to speed on the hydroxychloroquine shortage issue in the U.S. For those that are not familiar with that issue, hydroxychloroquine, or also the name brand, which is Plaquenil, is a prescription product that many of our patients take to help with their disease. About 43%, that's 43% of our patients take the medication for the disease. About 71% of you have tried it. So 71% have tried it, 43% currently take the product. Obviously, it's a very common first line of treatment for doctors to give to patients. There is some risk factors, and they work with each patient on those risk factors. And there's also some long-term risk factors, as you all know, like retinal toxicity, which is something you need to be followed for when you're on hydroxychloroquine or Plaquenil. With all that said, on March 9th, we stepped up first to start canceling some of our events and make decisions on our National Patient Conference and our Orlando, Florida walk. On March 11th, the foundation put out our first statement on COVID-19 and just things patients should be looking for precautionary moves. And we mentioned the potential shortage of hydroxychloroquine because I had read a story, thanks to Dr. Carrie Neal out of Florida, about some patients being prescribed of it in Paris, France. There was no big usage of it, but it just did concern me that if they started to use it, maybe there could be an issue. Then on March 17th, I did a video and also mentioned the shortage to make sure you all were up for refills, got your refills before you let them lag or didn't call right away and we wanted to get you in right away. Little did we know that then the President of the United States would start to tout hydroxychloroquine as a major treatment for the disease, thus causing a huge shortage in the United States. Obviously, since then, you've heard the news that hydroxychloroquine has been not really proven to help as much as they first thought, and that there's been some challenges with the use of it in treating Sjogren's, mostly because of the side effects that it can cause, among the risk pool of COVID-19 risk pool, which are people with other diseases like heart disease, diabetes, et cetera, the risk factors were even higher giving it to them. And thus this FDA, yes, this week came out with a statement that it should not be prescribed in COVID-19. And they haven't even finished clinical trials and they've come out with that statement. So that does make me wonder if the long-term, the results so far are not looking, they weren't looking good to start with, but that the public results we know of, but the private results they're seeing also don't show great results. Thus the FDA came out with that warning to make sure it wasn't being used without proper care in a clinical trial or in a hospital setting. Big difference from how the president was promoting it for many weeks. And that's very concerning to us because with the promotion of any inside clinical knowledge on the FDA, it can cause a ripple effect in any supply chain or product supply out in the United States. Thus, with it being promoted so highly, the hydroxychloroquine was being used and should be used, and who wouldn't try it? It caused a huge ripple effect through the lupus patient population, rheumatoid arthritis population, and the Sjogren's population. As some of you know, and I wrote this in our most recent question and answer this week, the reason that Sjogren's is not mentioned when they talk about hydroxychloroquine or Plaquenil is we do not have an indication for its use in Sjogren's. So what that means is no clinical trial was done with hydroxychloroquine to prove that it worked in Sjogren's, like they did do it for rheumatoid arthritis and lupus. What shocked me when I went to research this out with my staff and our physicians is that those clinical trials for lupus and rheumatoid arthritis were done back in 1956. You did not hear me wrong, but 1956 was when they did those clinical trials. We in the Sjogren's world have been using this medication to treat Sjogren's as a first-line treatment for almost 35 years. So there was really no reason for us to go into clinical trials for hydroxychloroquine, although there is some argument that we want some more evidence to prove that it works, and we are looking at those options. But long-term, there was no really reason until the shortage came out for two reasons. One is we never got mentioned, not that that mattered on airwaves that we weren't mentioned, lupus and RA were, because there was an indication for it. Although some media did talk about Sjogren's, some amazing media, we think amazing, did some stories on Sjogren's patients that couldn't get their medication, which helped for awareness in Sjogren's. That's why we think they're amazing. Anytime a story runs on Sjogren's, we're happy, although sad case in that regard. But it was good that they realized other people are using it off-label. Sjogren's, among other diseases, use it off-label. But Sjogren's being probably the most common that uses it off-label. And off-label means it doesn't have an indication for it, but it's used. But it's been a standard of care. It's went generic. It's been used for 35 years, as I mentioned. So by it being mentioned and being hoarded in the United States, the medication, it caused a shortage across all of the diseases that use it to treat their disease. And when I say being hoarded, I just want to clarify, because on Facebook, there's been a few mentions of this, and not necessarily on our page, actually, there was a person that said this. It was not being hoarded by current patients that take the medication, not by lupus patients, not by Sjogren's patients, not by RA patients who ran out and got refills. We all know you can't get a refill for a medication until you're close to being done with the medication. They just don't give it to you. So you really couldn't go out. Where the shortage came from is the United States federal government decided to stockpile the medication because the president and others, I guess on his team, felt it was going to work. So they stockpiled 30 million dosages of it. In addition, the state started stockpiling it, some of them, because of it being touted as a major medication for the disease. And then private doctors were starting to write prescriptions for their family and friends to get medications to use it on hand in case they ended up with COVID. Because the way it was being touted, if you remember a month ago, was that it was a pill you could just pop and it would help with your COVID-19. We know that's not the case now. So the new prescription rate flew up in the United States, thus causing our shortage, not because our patients were trying to get 90-day refills. So I just want you all to hear that because there's been some argument out there about that. In fact, it was so rampant, Kentucky, the state of Kentucky, Pharmacy Association came out with a guidance document that said they would not fill new prescriptions for Plaquenil for only 10-day supply because they saw all of a sudden this new ramping up of non-rheumatology prescriptions for hydroxychloroquine or Plaquenil. So there was that challenge. That's where the shortage came from. Give or take, we don't care where the shortage came from. We needed to make sure the voice of the Sjogren's patient wasn't silenced and that we were heard. We then wrote a letter ourselves with the help of our medical advisors to the FDA, as well as the White House Corona Task Force. Some of you know this already. We heard back from the FDA pretty immediately that they were working on this. They knew about this. And I have to thank Dr. Janet Woodcock from the FDA, who is one of the senior directors at FDA. She is actually a rheumatologist by trade, although works overseeing many divisions of FDA. And so she surely, we've met with her a number of times, knows about and cares about Sjogren's patients and knows about the use of hydroxychloroquine. So she personally wrote me back. I love her because she even signed it, JW, very personal, and wrote back within 10 minutes of that letter being sent that she knew about this, they were working on it, and we would see a relief by mid-April to late April, which I think we have been seeing that relief. While waiting for the FDA to move, which you, as you can imagine, is a bureaucratic division of the government, we weren't going to sit still. So we also went out and went, the White House Corona Task Force did receive our letter, no response from them, but we did also reach out to the pharma, which is the prescription pharmaceutical companies trade association for all the pharmaceutical companies. And I personally know the CEO of pharma. He put together a team and they reached out to all the manufacturers of Plaquenil and hydroxychloroquine. I'm proud to say that Novartis, United States President of Novartis, personally wrote me back to tell me that they were working on that. They made they took out their own stockpile and donated 130 million dosages to the use in COVID so it could release products for our patient population, lupus and RA, when I say patient population. And they were working on ramping up production. Today, we seem to think that is working. We also, in other letters, signed many letters, written letters, called people. We also reached out to all the governors, the health insurance boards in the United States, as well as the health insurance companies in the United States. In the meantime, as some of you know, the Kaiser Permanente, and I surely don't mind using their name and pretty much throwing them under the bus, wrote, as I feel, a very disturbing and disappointing letter to our patient population in California, stating that they would not be able to refill their prescriptions for hydroxychloroquine. Thus, they knew it would cause anxiety and stress and disease flares, which we know is an exacerbation of the disease. It's not just a flare that people, you know, seem to now downplay a flare, but that it would cause the disease flares. And they were sorry for this, but they also wanted to thank our patients for their sacrifice. Well, that did not sit well. So we, of course, reached out to Kaiser as well. Kaiser has surely gotten dragged through the mud in California, rightfully so, for this letter by rheumatologists and others and the media. So we have reached out to them. We now understand that also Humana in Tennessee might have written a similar letter, but not really with that horrible slant, more of a slant, we might not be able to refill your prescription because of a shortage, which if you're a PR person, that's what you would have written. You wouldn't have thanked them for their sacrifice and told them they were going to have a flare. So needless to say, we are over that hump, we believe. We've heard from more people than less that people are getting their prescriptions now. We haven't heard from as many not. If you are having a challenge with the shortage of hydroxychloroquine, we encourage you to email the FDA. The website is the email is on our website, but it's drugshortages@fda.hhs.gov. And if you need that, that is on our website, or you can ask a question later in the Zoom call, and I can repeat it, but it's drugshortages@fda.hhs.gov. And they need to hear about them if you're still seeing shortages or refusal for refills. But we have heard from a number of people, they are able to get their shortages. Of course, the bad news on hydroxychloroquine is it's not working so far. Now, it could change with the long-term clinical trials, but obviously people are not using it as regularly and they're not worrying about it. And the influx of all these people hoarding it has stopped. And so that's a good news for us. I do want to mention, because our medical advisors have mentioned this, if you're on hydroxychloroquine, it is not advised that you let any of your family members take that medication if they end up with COVID-19. So just hear me out. So you want to make sure your family member or loved ones talks to their physician before ever starting a medication because of some of the risk factors of hydroxychloroquine. In addition, if your loved one had a heart condition patients cannot go on hydroxychloroquine even if you have Sjogren's. So you want to make sure you're not just giving that medication yourself to your patients. So I just want to make sure that that's out there. In addition, as you all know, not only did we have to educate the governors and the president and others about the use of hydroxychloroquine and the FDA, we also, shockingly to all of you, continue to have to educate the rheumatologists in the United States about hydroxychloroquine. I'm sure if I ask some of you to raise your hand, you tell us that the first doctor you went to that in rheumatology didn't know much about Sjogren's, you left them and you found another doctor that actually did, and your life totally changed. We have a challenge still in the United States with rheumatologists not appreciating and respecting the disease. We are more common than lupus, multiple sclerosis, scleroderma, yet we're treated sometimes as a stepchild, and we surely fight with that on a regular basis at the foundation. So last week, I just want to mention that we are in discussions with the American College of Rheumatology because they put out a guidance document about the use of hydroxychloroquine during the shortage, although the shortage might be over by the time they came out with their document, but that maybe newly diagnosed patients with Sjögren's shouldn't get hydroxychloroquine. So we are in fights with the ACR right now trying to change that, as well as change their understanding of the use of hydroxychloroquine. As you probably can imagine, the rheumatologists that wrote this guidance document are not Sjögren's experts or treat very many Sjögren's patients, I'm sure, and they have an antiquated view of the disease. And thus, we have our data and our research. The letter went to the ACR, and we're waiting for a response from that. We hope that they will re-edit their guidance on that. But they did not say that it should not be used long-term. We just don't want it to be out there in the public domain in case a health insurance company ever wants to use it against denial of hydroxychloroquine or Plaquenil. So we want to make sure that that is taken back or are written more loosely so that no one can be used against us 2 years, 5 years down the road when there is no shortage or any issue. In addition to all of that advocacy work, we also started partnering with a COVID registry out of San Francisco that is working with rheumatologists to track their rheumatology patients that end up with COVID-19 so we can see if there's any history or knowledge about what's happening with those patients. For example, are they less likely to get it because they were on hydroxychloroquine? Is hydroxychloroquine helping? Is it more common among autoimmune diseases? We've not seen any study come out on that yet. We don't know the higher risk factor, although we know anytime you have a chronic illness, there's a chance you could end up with additional complications or contracting something. So we tell Sjögren's patients still to take the extra precautions because we want you to be as safe as possible. Although, because you have Sjögren's, you're not considered immunosuppressed. So just hear me, so make sure you hear that. Because you have Sjögren's, you're not necessarily immunosuppressed unless you're on immunosuppressant like the methotrexate or a CellCept or one of those medications. Hydroxychloroquine, Plaquenil is not an immunosuppressant. So that does not suppress your immune system. It modulates your immune system, but does not suppress it. However, with all that said, you have a chronic autoimmune disease, you should definitely take the extra precautions. So this COVID registry is starting to track patients that are being diagnosed. We at the foundation, honestly, I don't believe, and I look for Kathy and Ben to shake their heads, but we've not heard of anyone calling us that have Sjögren's that were diagnosed with the disease. So we've not really heard. So if you do contract it, you can surely, I'm sure it won't be top of mind to let us know, but by all means, you can let us know. We have not heard many calls about that. We have heard of maybe a couple here or there of a loved one of a patient, but not necessarily a patient. I'm not saying that that's not happening. We just haven't seen an influx of that necessarily. And then in addition to the frequently asked questions, I just wanted to run through a few of them so you know what's on that document. We did add one last week that had a question about dental visits and what you should be doing when you're missing dental visits. I encourage you to go visit that. It talks about using topical fluoride at home. That can be prescribed through your dentist to have a topical fluoride so you can use it in between since some of you go every 6 months, but now you've pushed it out to 9 or 10 months. In addition, we'll be adding a question later about doctor's appointments, especially around retinal toxicity and the use of hydroxychloroquine, and because you all go 6 months or every year for testing to make sure the hydroxychloroquine is not causing that, we do have an answer that will be going on our website later from an ophthalmologist on what you should do or how concerned you should be if you've missed your appointment by a month or two. I will tell you that part of the answer does say that you want to stop medication. Call your doctor right away if you see signs of blindness, blind spots, blurriness, in extra blurriness, that all of a sudden is a quick onset, and you are worried that the blindness or sight issues are could be a sign of hydroxychloroquine. To call your rheumatologist and your ophthalmologist, many of them can see you emergency-wise, but also you will want to talk to them, but typically they have you stop it right away because it takes weeks to come out of your system. So you do want, once you see signs of any issues with your eyes, you do want to stop the medication, but you'll see that question as well. We have many other questions on there about mask wearing. We, of course, encourage you to wear masks. We can't give you an answer about working from home, going to work, being forced to go to work. Obviously, you want to be as safe as you possibly can and talk to your doctor about any other risk factors you should be concerned about having to go to work. In addition, you always want to be building your immune system up as best you can. We have some answers on what you can be doing there, but I will tell you vitamin C, vitamin D, and getting plenty of sleep is critical, and that's what doctors keep saying. I mentioned the questions on immunosuppressants. The list of immunosuppressants are on our frequently asked documents. And then also, we do not know, the other question that was commonly asked, we don't know, as I mentioned, the research around, are you less likely to get it because you're on hydroxychloroquine? Are you more likely to get it because you have Sjogren's? We don't know yet until more research is done and data comes out as we get through this pandemic. So I encourage you to go look at that frequently asked documents, frequently asked questions document on our website. And also the video from last week that I posted as well that talks about some of the stuff we're doing. I do want to mention, we did launch our town hall meeting series again. We had such a great resounding support the first time that we extended to 6 new lectures. As you all know, you're on the first one. We have creative ways to stay busy, which will be this Thursday at 3:00 and 8:00. And that's going to be ideas and things you've never thought to do or you might have thought to do to keep busy, do new things while you're stuck at home. My mother is actually a Sjogren's patient. As I mentioned, she's going to be doing that call. And she is an idea person. So she will be listing various things that you may or may not have thought about doing while at home. Or long-term, because, you know, some of you don't go out, venture out much because of your disease. Some of you are at home and can't work. And some of these ideas might come in handy down the road as well, even after we're all quarantined. Exercise will be next week. Ideas to exercise in your home. That means from you've not got off the couch in 3 years to people that went to the gym every day. So Mary Wiseman is amazing. Her niece has Sjogren's. She's going to run the rampant of everything from literally you haven't gotten off the couch in 3 years and went out to get mail to all the way to I went to the gym every day before quarantine and give you some tips inside the home of things you can do just to start exercising or continue the regimen that you've lost because you're not at the gym. I have a feeling if you used to go to the gym every day, you might have some exercise equipment in your house because you might be a gym fanatic. It's going to be mainstream. You're going to be able to get something from Mary. I don't want you to feel like you have to be an exercise person to join her call because she surely works with all types of people. As mentioned, her niece has Sjogren's. She's very committed and she's a personal trainer. Eating healthy and staying healthy is going to be done by a nutritionist that's spoken for us before. Just tidbits of how you can stay healthy and just choose better options at home. We all know, as the joke online says, we all need to social distance from our refrigerator a little bit more. That is a challenge these days. For myself. And so I'll be looking forward to maybe some tips. We probably all know the tips. We just don't always follow the tips, but it's good to hear them one more time. And then products that Sjogren's patients use. We decided to invite our different corporate supporters and that we're not charging them to be on this call. We've invited many of the lead products that patients use to treat their disease to be on the call to give a quick snapshot of what their product is and what it does and how you can order it online. We've not charged any of those people to be on. We've chosen some of the top products that patients have told us about over the years, things like TheraTears, Basic Bites, IECO, which makes Tranquilize, et cetera. They'll be on to share their products and what's available. Some you've heard of, some you may have never heard of, and it'll be a great opportunity for you to learn about some of the products that are out there. And then finally, we're going to do a call on May 19th, our last call of the series, which will be done by myself and Kathy Hammett. Kathy is our Vice President of Medical and Scientific Affairs. We're going to give you an update on where we are with clinical trials, clinical practice guidelines, and other medical and scientific initiatives, and where we're going and how really we haven't stopped during COVID on those projects, but that to give you a look for the future of where we think we'll be in the next year or 2 years with some of those initiatives. And that'll be May 19th. That wraps up our series. We did these series mostly to connect with all of you. I love seeing the faces. We love seeing each other, hearing the questions from all of you. But also, we knew we weren't going to be able to hold support group meetings. And so support groups have been canceled until June 1st. No support group will be meeting until after that. All of our events have been canceled until June 1st. We did make a decision this past week to move our Washington, D.C. area walk and our Denver walk. Washington, D.C. area is May 16th. Denver walk is May 30th. We've moved them to a virtual platform, which means that we'll be doing a Zoom kickoff on those days for each of those walks at 10 a.m. like we are here. We'll be having our Ask the Doctor sections that we usually have at our walk up at the microphone. We're going to have here on Zoom. So patients that join the walk kickoff can ask doctors questions about Sjogren's. We'll have an ophthalmologist. We'll have a rheumatologist, et cetera, taking questions from the audience. And then we'll thank our sponsors, talk about how much money we raised. Everyone will be in their shirts on camera. And then everyone else go outside their homes to walk safely in their neighborhood. We hope it'll be a great way to kind of bring the community together, hear from some great doctors, but also still be able to hold the events and raise money for the foundation because money obviously is still critical to our mission long-term. So May 16th is Washington, D.C. May 30th is Denver. We're looking at our June events now to make decisions on what to do with those. If you want to join one of those events, you can. You don't have to live in those cities. You can still virtually walk from home. We'll also be having a national virtual walk later in June that will be available for the whole country to join a kickoff, hear from doctors, and then step outside in your neighborhood. Sometime in June, that national virtual walk will be. In addition, our national conference was moved, as you all know, from April 3rd and 4th to late June, June 26th and 27th. We, along with all of you, are praying we can still come together by then. However, I want you to know, because before a few of you raise your hand and start yelling at me, we understand that some of you don't want to come no matter when it is, June, July, or August. Some of you won't feel comfortable coming, and that is totally fine. We're going to make the decision closer to in May sometime about that event, and we may look at live streaming that event as well as holding it in person for some people that feel comfortable to travel or local people that live in the Phoenix area. If worst case, we'll cancel the whole thing and go live streaming with the entire conference if we have to. And final choice is just canceling the whole thing. Moving it to the fall really isn't any option. And if we have another setback with COVID in the fall, it doesn't really help us. We're in the same boat again. So we figure we're going to do something at the end of June. It may be a hybrid approach. We are listening to our medical advisors as well as making the best decision possible. As I always say on these calls, and when I talk to people, my mother's a Sjogren's patient. If I'm not willing to let my mother travel to Phoenix to come to the conference, I wouldn't hold the conference. I'll go all live streaming. So I make the decision based on what is right for the patients first and foremost, even if we lose money by canceling the conference. I want you to know the conference hotel was going to charge us $60,000 to cancel back in April. It is a huge contract for us. So money does does factor in regards to our decision to try to move it to late June, because we needed to move the event to get out of a fight with the contract. But come late June, if we can't hold it, we're willing to pay the penalty, cancel it, and do what we have to do for our patient population. But that's why we picked up the event and moved it to late June, because it was the first way to get out of our contract for April 3rd and 4th by agreeing we announce another date. From there, we'll make a decision what to do to cancel. And if it's a cancellation fee of $40,000 or $50,000, we'll do it if it's the safety of our patients. So just rest assured, we'll do the right decision for all of you. In addition, we are, as I mentioned, we're still working on our events come June. Other events we're trying to make decisions on. We aren't going to be able to move everything to September, but some walks might move to September. We just don't know yet. We'll make decisions as we get into May here. But moving every event is a contractual fight with the company to move an event and announcing and all that. So we're just through our May events. Now we're working on our June events. So stay tuned and be patient with us as we move. We still are a small staff. And all working from home. A couple of us go to the office part-time, but pretty much everyone's trying to telework, and that's a challenge, as you can imagine, for our organization as well. And of course, finally, I would be remiss if I didn't mention, I thank you for any financial support and donations that you've given over the years to the foundation so that we could be ready for such things like this. Thanks to your support over the years, we were ready and able to jump in with these town hall meetings, our first five, and now these, as well as continue our support of all of you. And going forward, we'll still hope to have some of your support, because obviously we still need donations to keep moving forward and doing what we're doing. But we also understand that patients have challenges right now, spouses or themselves losing employment, their children losing employment, all different issues, and we understand that as well, and we're here to support you. I do want to mention that if any of you did lose your position or your spouse did and financial hardship has hit your family, we will extend your membership free of charge for a year. Just call the foundation office. And we will take care of you to extend you for a year without any issue at all. We don't want you to lose the great information or the access to things just because of COVID-19 and issues that you've had. So please keep that in mind as well moving forward. I think I hit everything. I will take questions now. Ben will remind me if I forgot to hit anything. But please, comments, questions, ideas. We're only best because of your ideas and thoughts. We can't always add everything that you think of right now, but you never know if you plant a seed if you have an idea as well. So with that, I will take questions. If you're on Zoom, you can go down to the box that says chat. It says
participants.
Sorry, it has participants right now. Has a 97 next to it, that little two people icon. You can hit raise hand. There's three grayed out buttons: invite, mute me, or raise hand. After you hit the participant button, you'll see it come to the right. You can hit raise hand, and that'll put your hand up. If you're on the phone and you dialed in, it's *9. So *9 if you want to raise your hand, or go to the participant button at the bottom of your screen and you'll see kind of the participants list come up and you'll see the grayed out button on the right hand side to raise hand. So with that, does anyone have a comment or question? And Ben will unmute you to bring you in. So we have one from Nora, I believe, Ben, right?
Yep. Hey, Nora, go ahead.
I am taking chloroquine phosphate. And I understand, I just started with a new rheumatologist, and he said I had a reaction recently to Plaquenil.
Yep.
And he said that it is part of the Plaquenil family. And I wanted to know, you know, your feelings about it. Is that the case? He said I won't have a severe reaction with it, and I'm doing well on it.
Yes. So it is another anti-malarial drug that basically patients do end up on it. And they sometimes go on it. I don't know. I'm not a medical doctor. I should have started off the entire conference with that. I've been around a long time and know a lot about Sjogren's. But the hydroxy part's not in it, which sometimes people react to better by just the chloroquine phosphate. But it is in the same family. So you're not alone in regards to that. And also, if you want to learn more about things around specifically that from other patients, we do have our website, our discussion board, if you will, called Smart Patients. And you can post a question or go in there and search for people that have talked about chloroquine phosphate, and you can get answers from other patients as well. And that's Smart Patients. It's on our website. There's a link to it. You can Google in Smart Patients Sjogren's Foundation, and the link should come up for Smart Patients. And it's just a discussion board where you can go read tons of questions and answers about the disease. You can post a question saying, does anyone else have hair loss? Does anyone else get chills at night? Does anyone take chloroquine phosphate? I would search for it first, because there probably is a discussion already started on it. That will be quite lengthy, and you'll be able to read through that as well.
Okay, thank you, Stephen. I appreciate it.
No problem, Nora. Good luck.
Thank you.
Yep. Any other raise your hand by using the raise your hand button or *9, or I just talked for 27 more minutes, which some of you know I can talk for 27 more minutes, right? I can see you nodding your head, some of you. So, yes.
We have a question from Karen.
Oh, thank goodness Karen has a question. So I'll start showing pictures of my kids. So. And my mother's on, so I'm sure she would talk as well. But Karen, go ahead.
Can you hear me?
I can, and I can see you, Karen.
Oh, this is my first time using Zoom. About 2 weeks ago, NIH made an announcement of a test. They were recruiting 10,000 people to look at them to see if they had any antibodies to the virus.
Mm-hmm.
And they invited people to send an email if they wanted to participate, and I did, but I never heard anything back. But I think that would a test like that would be a good opportunity to see if some of the tests used in diagnosing Sjogren's
mm-hmm.
or other autoimmune diseases, like antibodies, play a big role in that. Is there any conflict or any considerations that need to be taken when the antibody test for the virus is being developed compared with other tests that rely on antibodies? And are you aware of any work in that area or anybody that's interested in that? Sure. I haven't heard from NIH.
Yeah, so my understanding is the antibody test, there's a couple things happening. One is the antibody test is trying to identify people that might have had COVID and already got through it. But also, I'm sure they're looking for tons of people to take them. I'm sure they've been overwhelmed with volunteers. You know, I think always a medical history, making sure they know your medical history is important. And if you're on hydroxychloroquine or any other medications to change maybe an outcome of an antibody test. I really haven't heard them reach out to Sjogren's patients or autoimmune disease patients anymore. Mostly all I've heard is them reaching out to past COVID survivors looking at their antibodies. I haven't heard of a general call for testing necessarily for patients itself. However, I would surely consider doing it if it was neat. I would do it myself if it was an easy test to be tested. I think, as you all know, we have a testing issue as it is in the United States with COVID. So it would be great if they could ramp up and test, you know, and start studying those people, just general population people that haven't necessarily saw symptoms or been diagnosed. I don't know much about that test necessarily. I just Googled it real quick while you were asking the question, and it doesn't really make sense. It doesn't really talk too much about it. It does ask if you're a good candidate. It says basically they're looking for anyone that didn't have any related symptoms. So you can definitely, I would look into it, search NIH. I would be careful. However, that, you know, I just did that and it came up even as a for-profit site. So even though I put NIH antibody test, it came up as a for-profit organization. So I do always warn you about that. Make sure that you go to NIH's direct site and go to where they suggest you go. Because this site ended up, after I started reading that, it started saying, oh, you can buy a kit from us. So you always want to be careful about that as well. So just make sure, you know, if you're going to take part in something. I'm sure you went to NIH directly, but I mean, you just
want to be careful. I'm retired from NIH, so.
Well, then you know, Karen.
I went straight to the director's page. Good. If they talked about it there. But I guess my main interest is, and I had just sent them a little snippet of my, mm-hmm. my blood test that was used to diagnose me, because it wasn't that long ago, the SSA antibody. And I thought they might be interested, or if it would just disqualify, then I could find out quickly. But I guess the more general question is, the people that are working on these antibody tests, what are they doing to make sure they're not false positives or false negatives because of the complications that people like us have these other antibodies?
I think, you know, and as I mentioned, I'm not a doctor, but I think there's a lot of challenges with anything new. If you read anything about it, as I've been with the research and talking to medical professionals I talk to on a daily basis, there's a lot of challenges that we don't know with with COVID-19, the false positives, the antibody testing, just the false positives on regular testing, let alone figuring out who has antibodies and who doesn't, as well as the mass production of testing. You know, there's the 15-minute test versus the 2-day test, you know, how they're saying now some of them are not as, there's not as much quality in some of them as there is in others. So there's a lot of challenges with the testing, but it's all new. So I think, you know, they go in knowing that's going to happen, and we just have to push through and learn at the end where there's positives, where there's negatives of everything they learn, and then figure out, make it better. So, but they started from really nowhere, and now we have to get somewhere. So sometimes that's where we have to go in science. As you know, if you work at NIH, sometimes we have to start somewhere. So we have some type of baseline. And then we start ripping apart that baseline, figuring out where the real baseline is, and then go from there. So I think there's definitely challenges. I will say there's some amazing scientists working in this field. And some have been pulled in from rheumatology to work in this field as well. Because some of our rheumatologists, don't forget, are also co-trained in immunology. Not necessarily infectious diseases, but immunology. And a lot of them have basic science backgrounds. So we know a number of our rheumatology friends are being pulled into working on this. So, and of course, with the idea that some of these drugs that they've been trying, because I didn't mention earlier, hydroxychloroquine is only one of about 12 drugs they're looking at using. And a number of them are rheumatological drugs they're looking at using to treat COVID. So, rheumatologists have been tapped to help some of their medical centers learn about these drugs a little bit more. But we still have a lot more questions than answers on a lot of stuff, Karen, unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, just one more quick comment, because I don't know if I was being clear. I guess I'm more concerned about, I think I had the impression this big study is being done to just try to get a better idea of how many people in the general population may have had it. And the virus and don't even know it. You know, it's that sort of thing more than a purely treatment-oriented test. So maybe as the association organizes some of its meetings down the road in a few months, you might be able to find somebody that could come in and address some of these issues.
I think that's great. You know, and I did understand that part, Karen, because also, so they're looking for candidates. Now they've chosen some sites around the country to do these trials. It's not just the NIH in Bethesda. And so we definitely are, they are looking for these people. And some of the studies have already come out. I know New York State has done some of these already and shown how many people were tested positive that never showed symptoms. And mm-hmm. so definitely the more people we can get in there like that, the more they'll learn about it. So I definitely think you're right. And if there's a way we can promote the studies or looking for patients or looking for autoimmune disease patients specifically in a trial, we'll always work with NIH. So, and we'll look into that. I think it's a great idea. We'll see if there's any collaboration or anything we can offer. We are looking at a registry for patients to go on and register themselves. We haven't exactly partnered with one because we haven't exactly, we want to make sure that the caliber and the credibility is there for registries, because a lot of registries quickly started. And some of them have been started basically so they can capture patients' names, addresses, and phone numbers for other things. And we want to make sure we start with a reputable one that, not that they're not reputable, we just don't, we want to make sure we're, if we're going to partner with them on COVID, it's about COVID and not going to turn into one about something else down the road where then they start selling you stuff or recruiting you for other things. And so we want to, so we haven't found one exactly, but this one we did partner with out of San Francisco is one that rheumatologists have partnered with to collect information on their rheumatology patients per se, and Sjogren's is one of the diseases they're looking at in that, but a rheumatologist would sign you up in that registry to follow you. So we are starting to promote that among all of our rheumatologists to join that, but definitely we'll look into this one, Karen. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Steve, we have Marcia with a question. Marcia, you are unmuted.
Hey, Marcia.
Hi. I actually have a question. I am a Sjogren's patient, but I have a question about my sister, who is a lupus patient. Her rheumatologist changed her 3-month supply to 1 month a month ago. And when she went to apply again just a couple of days ago, he told her he wasn't going to give them to her anymore because of the COVID. And this was just a few days ago, so he should have known that the you know, that the supply was supposed to be getting better. So she's at a loss of what to do with her rheumatologist not letting her have her medication.
Well, yeah, I would agree with that. So I would definitely fight. I would also encourage her, especially since she has lupus, to look on Lupus Foundation of America. They've been a huge fighter in this case. Lupus Foundation has come up with great talking points and different things for lupus patients to use. But I'm shocked to hear that because, you know, I would fight back because, you know, the one thing is a shortage. The other is it's not really up to necessarily the doctor to decide there's a shortage, but to prescribe it and then see if the pharmacy can get it for her.
Right.
And that's what I would argue is let the pharmacy decide if there's actually a shortage. Why are you protecting the shortage? For what reason? I mean, I would definitely fight back and not take that, especially, and I don't want to downplay Sjogren's because, you know, I fight for Sjogren's. I see my mother online now, her face is there, but the I fight for Sjogren's regularly, and I don't want to downplay, but lupus patients need their hydroxychloroquine sometimes for life and death. Sjogren's patients need it for their life to function. Some need it for life and death too, especially Sjogren's and lupus, but lupus patients, it's been proven, it can be a deadly decision to not be on hydroxychloroquine. Maybe not your sister's choice or condition specifically, but I would fight very hard to not go off that and let the pharmacy tell you if there's a shortage. You could also call the pharmacy that she would have got her refill and see if they have a shortage and see if they're filling, refilling, and then call the doctor back, call the pharmacy, and they said they have plenty of medications. Why are you stopping? There might be other reasons. I don't want to downplay the doctor. They might have looked at blood work. They might have decided it's not necessary. I don't know. But it doesn't sound like that. It sounds like they're just using the shortage. I would call the pharmacy and then call the doctor back.
Okay. Thank you very much.
And just so you know, other pharmacists, other pharmacies have been refilling. So some mail orders have been, as well as other, so CVS on one street corner and Rite Aid on another, they've been able to refill and others have not. So you just don't know. So,
Thank you.
Yep. I think we have Joyce next. And then Janice, are you raising your hand? Janice, is that you raising your hand? You're trying to get my attention? So we'll come to you after Joyce, I think, right, Ben? And then we'll go down to Janice.
Hello, how are you?
Great. How are you, Joyce?
I'm okay. So I have a comment and then I have a question.
Sure.
I have lupus and Sjogren's. Mm-hmm. And my comment to your last caller, and I hate to cast aspersions, but I would have her sister call her insurance.
Good point.
And make sure that her prescription wasn't filled by the doctor for his family. You don't know. You know,
right.
So I would just cover all the bases. I'd call both the insurance and the pharmacy. My second
good point
thing is in the Sjogren's Quarterly in winter of 2020, it talks about benzalkonium chloride and how that's really bad for you, basically. And I was wondering, because my ophthalmologist has me on Restasis and on erythromycin ointment and on a lid wash. And she knows that besides using the Restasis, I use Gentile gel, but I also in between use Visine. And the reason I always use Visine is because it doesn't blur my vision, so I could still work on the computer or do my accounting. And nobody ever mentioned to me, neither her nor my optometrist, that, hey, you shouldn't be using those because it has benzyl conium chloride in it. And I've seen a big improvement in my eyes because after I read this article, I went to the store and I looked for some of the medications that it mentions reverse the corneal damage that that chemical does. And mm-hmm. I've seen a huge improvement. And I'm like, why wasn't this article done earlier? Because apparently it was known about it, but maybe expected the FDA to do something about it, or I'm not sure, but why hasn't, you know, a specialist told me? They knew what I was using.
Yeah, so I'm not as familiar with that. But however, I will tell you, for years, doctors from the podiums have told people not to use Visine at all of our conferences. Visine isn't necessarily, although it has a great name brand, it doesn't have all, they don't always talk about what you just talked about, but I know Visine has been definitely downplayed by our medical professionals. I do want to say that, unfortunately, doctors are not that up to date. They still tell patients to use eye drops that have preservatives in it. They tell them to just pick one, and if they're happy with it, it's fine. They don't do eye tests. They don't. There's so many issues in the medical field for our disease that they just, you know, not to downplay doctors because some can't know everything, but they should, with all those medication complications, they should maybe know something is in one of them that might conflict with what else you're taking. But that's the challenge with over-the-counter medications. No one's tracking them. So if you get all your prescriptions at one pharmacy, they can tell you if there's an interaction that you don't know about. But then we add in supplements, we add on eye drops. You know, it's always good to tell your doctors everything you're using. It sounds like you did, and they still didn't think of the connection. But that is the challenge with our disease, I think, is sometimes you all have to be more educated than the doctors to make sure you're keeping them on track of what you read and bringing them things like the Sjogren's Quarterly, et cetera, which I think, you know, show them the article as well.
It was just frustrating because they started to see changes in my eyes, and I went through a bunch of really weird tests, and they couldn't really figure out what was going on.
Yep.
But they suggested that I go off the Plaquenil because they thought maybe they were seeing the early signs of toxicity because I've been on Plaquenil for a couple of decades. And so I went off the Plaquenil, and now I'm thinking it wasn't the Plaquenil, it was the Visine, you know.
Right, which it very well could have been, for sure. And you're seeing a resurgence of your eyes without an issue with going off Visine? You've seen an improvement?
Yeah, I'm seeing a big improvement.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not, I mean, I've heard that before, and I'll look in that article and see if there's a way that maybe we can make sure we call it out to other doctors. Because I know the Sjogren's Quarterly well, but I don't remember that specific thing and how it was written. So I'll look into that and see if there's a way that can maybe highlight a little more. I did just get a text from my vice president. It was highlighted. So the reason it's new information, it came out of the dry eye workshop, which came out with new guidelines last year for dry eye treatment. And that's where it came out as science been found that that's not a good treatment option. And so the dry eye workshop, which is for all dry eyes, not just Sjogren's, came out with new guidelines last year called dry DEWS. It's DEWS, DEWS, dry eye workshop 2. DEWS 1 came out. We then wrote our Sjogren's guidelines on dry eye. And then DEWS 2 came out. So we'll be updating our dry eye. So I'm sure this will make it in our new update for dry eye as well. But that's where it came out of, was DEWS workshop last year.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, Joyce, thanks for bringing that up. And we'll definitely look at that. It might be a good thing to just send to ophthalmologists, optometrists, and others to remind them of that one.
Yeah, I'm going to. Yeah.
Yeah. No, and us too as well. So thank you for bringing that up. So.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, no Visine. So I think, did you have a question, Janice? Yes. You want to unmute her down there? Benjamin, do you see her? There you are, Janice.
Okay. Hello. Hi. Nice to see you.
Great to see you.
Great forum. I plan to attend many.
So oh, good.
For doing these. I am a 39-year RA patient and at least a 20-year Sjogren's patient. Yeah. I took Plaquenil for a long time because when I got RA, there wasn't much. There was just prednisone and what else? Oh, gold. And Plaquenil.
Yep.
And it helped, but I paid the price for it. So I have retinal blindness that is considered actual blindness.
Yep.
And I will tell you that I know nobody wants to give up their Plaquenil. However, beyond a year or two, it's too long, according to eye doctors. And I have consulted many, many around the world.
Yep.
Because this continues to get worse. I've been off it at least 20 years, and it stays in the colored tissues of the eye, and it just will continue to get worse. Mm-hmm. And once you see, what I want to say to people who are listening, please, I know you don't want to give up your Plaquenil, but you do not want to lose your vision. A long time is beyond a year. And my eye doctor actually talked to a nurse when I was getting a cataract, and she had RA, and he told her she was on 3 years, no symptoms. But he said, that's way too long. The rheumatologists prescribe it, and I see the blindness, and then it's too late. If you use an AMSLAR grid, it is just a little card that's black with white lines, and it looks like an X with lines, and you use both eyes and then cover one eye at a time. If you see wavy lines, you've got a problem. And this is how I found it, but it was too late. So I just want people to be using that every day. And once you have damage, it is unlikely that it will reverse, much to the contrary of many ophthalmologists who will tell you it will reverse. No, I've done decades of research with renowned specialists in this, and I hope that somebody can verify this to Sjogren's patients who are listening. It is hard to give up something that works for you, but you don't want to lose your vision. So discuss the longevity of use, please, and use the AMSLAR grid to discuss this use, not with your rheumatologist, with your ophthalmologist.
And Stephen, one more thing, if you take Silverman. I'm a chemie, and I did a lot of patents.
Yes. Yeah.
Sanofi knows which enantiomer in the drug causes the blindness. Mm-hmm. Their patents issued.
So they know the bad guy.
They know how they can fix it, and they refuse. If you guys want to form a lobby, I couldn't do it alone. We couldn't get a legal action. But maybe if enough people are concerned and use and want to continue this drug, they should ask the company or petition the company to try to get them to open the question again and get rid of the bad enantiomer.
They can do it. He talked to the doctor, the scientist, excuse me, who patented this. And she knew what it was, and the company just wouldn't spend the money.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be that difficult.
And that's been, part of the challenge is obviously with clinical trials with hydroxychloroquine, it hasn't been, it's been on the market so long, no one wants to spend money on a clinical trial. But I just want to make sure everyone heard Janice's concern, because she's spot on in regards to working with your ophthalmologist or optometrist, your eye care provider, is to go through regular checkups, not skip the checkups. Obviously, COVID throws in a little bit of a wrench with that, but make sure you're continuing your checkups, as well as because your rheumatologist isn't going to be able to tell if your eyesight's having issues. I will say, Janice isn't the only person I know that had retinal toxicity. I know a very, very good friend of the foundation who's a very dear friend of mine, also has blindness issues. The statistics are very small. However, you don't want to stay on it any longer than you have to because of that. And also, as Janice clearly said, is you end up, it stays in your bloodstream way longer than when you're on it. So getting off of it doesn't mean you're off of it in a week or 2 weeks. It can take a long time for it to fully go. As she said, it can remain in your tissues long term and continue to cause more and more sight issues long term. Little by little by little. It doesn't happen overnight necessarily. So you do want to watch for that. With that said, the statistics of all the research has been done is it's still small. However, as Janice well said, is do you want to have that chance or do you want to try something else, maybe than hydroxychloroquine or Plaquenil? And working with your rheumatologist on what other options there are, prednisone, methotrexate, what other options are there that you might want to go on? Some of you are willing to have the short-term fix of being on a hydroxychloroquine with chance of maybe having an eye issue long-term. But Janice's other point is there hasn't been great studies done for people that have been on it for 30 years or 20 years. And that's where we're a little we are a little concerned with the medication. We talk about this, is we're seeing people on it now for 30 years. That's where maybe the concern is as well. But again, work with your eye care provider right away. Make sure you're not missing any of those appointments, and beyond those as well. Make sure you don't miss any of them, because it's critical, because you definitely, as Janice said, don't want to choose eyesight over maybe what it's doing. Now, some of you, it's doing amazing work for your disease, so you want to be on it for that. But some of you might be doing minimal enough work that you would rather be off it than take the risk. So it really varies. It's one of the reasons, because of the eye issue, among other issues with hydroxychloroquine, that myself, Kathy Hammett, our Vice President of Medical Affairs, as well as Matt McCarr, our Director of Research, is working on clinical trials, because there's a lot of challenges with hydroxychloroquine. It's been around a long time. And Plaquenil, which is, Sanofi makes Plaquenil. Other companies make hydroxychloroquine, same drug, just generic versus name brand. There's a lot of challenges with that for patients, is we want a better drug on the market for our disease. And that's why we're working in clinical trials with 11 companies who are now in clinical trials for a drug for the entire disease, not just another symptomatic drug. So not another dry eye drug or a dry mouth drug, a drug that will treat the entire disease. We are working with 11 companies. They have about 25 different compounds or assets that we're looking at that have potential in treating the disease, because we think that's going to be the biggest impact we can have long-term on this disease. Not looking at hydroxychloroquine and if it works or doesn't work, although I don't want to downplay, I'm not saying the symptoms and the complications of Janice aren't important. Those are extremely important to us. But doing another research project on hydroxychloroquine may not be the answer, as it is to find a new medication so we all have better options. So we don't have to go on hydroxychloroquine and end up with Janice and my friends blindness issues. So definitely, and on the 19th of May, we will be talking about that. Janice, your husband will love to hear about that. Our work in clinical trials as well, because we're working with so many companies that are investing and investigating various treatment options. Thank you, Janice, for sharing your personal story. I appreciate that. So with that, I don't see any other hands raised. So I will wrap up and thank you again for joining today's call. We hope to hear you this Thursday, next week, and the week after on future calls. And by all means, the foundation is open still. We're just answering phones from home. By all means, you can email or call us if you need anything. And please know we are here to support you. And please be safe. As I always say, please be safe. Wash those hands and social distance. So thanks, everybody. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.